Welcome to Leaf to Bieber. The web has changed nothing. Thank you all for coming on the last possible slot of South by South Interactive. So we really appreciate that. We promise that it will be a good time for all but one of you. So we'll just see who that ends up being. Anyway, I will advance the slide twice because you messed it up. Did it go three times? It did. This is me in my best Dreamboat pose, holding a puppy, which is a standard issue for Dreamboats. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I am the president of Quack Media. We make TV and do a lot of advertising, creative. We have branded content online for Turner Broadcasting, Adult Swim. We have the Detroit Red Wings as a client, if you're familiar with the professional hockey squad. And I am going to tell you more about Twittering and stuff. Hashtag Leaf to Bieber. If you want to talk about us, Sarah Meany can be found at Sarah Meany. That's an at symbol. And I can be found at Joey Lawrence _, because there is another Joey Lawrence, apparently. And that's how you talk about us right now, because the web has changed one thing, and it's happening right now.
And this is my Dreamboat pose, everyone. Is anyone here familiar with Brian Solis? Have you guys seen? Okay, so Brian Solis is also known for borrowing people's glasses. I don't wear glasses. Brian Solis doesn't wear glasses, and he's a friend of mine. So one day, I did a Brian Solis pose, and now that's my beefcake shot. Anyway, so I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I am president of Hanson Dodge Creative, and we are a creative and interactive agency. We work with clients like Wilson Sporting Goods, Trek Bicycles, Thule Sport Racks for cars, and we focus on the active lifestyle brand space. So between Al and myself, we tend to work with a lot of different brands, but our perspective on what the internet has done to our work is that it has affected us, but it hasn't actually changed how well we need to know how to do marketing. So that is the premise of today's talk. So, Al and I met, actually, because of Twitter, because of Joey Lawrence, to be specific. Al is not a huge proponent of use of Twitter. However, having started a Joey Lawrence account, one of his employees actually had started following me on Twitter, and I responded thinking how fantastic it was that Joey Lawrence was following me back. And it turns out, Al's business and my original business were kind of complementary, and we ended up being friends because of Twitter, much to Al's chagrin. So the conversation ensued by us talking about how social media had actually changed our business so much. And his argument was that the internet actually changed nothing. And the more we argued about it, the more we realized we agreed upon it. And hence, today's talk was born. So we realized that back in the day, when Leif Garrett was the Dreamboat du jour, things were not all that different from how they are today with Justin Bieber. And we have a mashup video that we think is a good way to kick off why we think that. Oh, switcher. That's the one. Oh, so amazing about this mashup is that the poses are the same, the photos are the same, the puppies are the same. We actually believe the one puppy to be the great-great-grandchild puppy of the other. So, while Leif Garrett had quite a career, for those of you in the audience who were not around for Leif Garrett, I was kind of barely around for Leif Garrett, we actually found it interesting that while his career today is not quite what Bieber's is today, he actually was a big deal. He was a really big deal. He had four singles that charted in the top 100 on the U.S. Hot 100. He was in movies. He was in films. He was on a lot of TV shows. He was in 28 films, 16 TV appearances, including Chips, California Highway Patrol, if anybody remembers that show. Now, that was a hot, hot show, and Leif Garrett was a hot ticket item, right? So let's compare that with Justin Bieber today. What we know is that Baby, the video, the original music video, is now the most viewed video on YouTube of all time, which is outrageous, really, when you think about it, because the song is kind of crap. But 2009, his album My World was certified platinum. That means he exceeded 1 million album sales. And that's an accomplishment so many artists actually never make. So 2010 Grammys, he won Best New Artist, including and Best Pop Vocals. And he's been on TV and film, including CSI. Cop shows in common. Thought that was interesting. So what are we actually looking at? So is it that the internet made Justin Bieber popular and that, you know, Leif Garrett wasn't before we actually had YouTube and before we could buy iTunes? Well, the argument would be, well, the channels have changed. But we had Tiger Beat back then. They posed in Tiger Beat. We had puppies back then. But they also did a lot of appearances on television shows and have to tour and have to have really good merchandise and have to have a really good story. And the product has to be at least acceptable to the audience that it's targeting, right? You've got teen girls who have expendable money and they actually really, really want this music. So we would argue that while the channels have changed, it wasn't the internet that specifically made Justin Bieber more or less popular than Leif Garrett. Now, the speed at which it happened, can we argue that that's the case? Well, what we don't have is the trackability of data from Leif Garrett. What we do know is that the change in channel and that the digital age actually lets us keep track a little bit more specifically how this product is actually selling. So we can tell that through sales and through his commercial success, Leif Garrett actually was a really big deal. But can we say how many views he had of videos? Can we say how many downloads? No, because the product was slightly different back then. So we purport that the internet isn't necessarily the difference in the success between the two. So the reach. Were there more teen girls back then than there are today? Significantly? I mean, the answer is no. So the audience, the number of sales, and the dollar amount in today's value, we're arguing are basically the same thing as well. So the other thing that actually started the argument between Al McWilliams and myself is that people believe that because of the democracy of information online, that the better product will actually rise to the top, right? So because people can vote with their feet, vote with their fingers by ordering music online, that means better music, better product, better audio, all of that stuff is going to happen because the people have a voice, right? And all the crap is going to fall and all the good stuff is going to rise to the top. What say you about the quality of Justin Bieber's music versus Leif Garrett's music? The audience itself decides that they really, really want that product. So it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. So the democracy of this audience is that they vote by buying albums, they vote by watching video, they vote by downloading information, and by buying Tiger Beat magazine. So in this case, we know what's happened to Leif since then, but at the same time, as a product, comparatively, apples to apples, we don't think the internet actually is what made the big, big difference there. So that's case number one.
So everybody is familiar with Mustafa by now. If you're not, this is the Old Spice guy. He is a big deal. He was
a big man.
He was a big man.
Big man.
This next example, we wanted to take away from music a little bit and get into something that we can make the channel equal. So we're going to judge the effects after the channel. So this was actually originally a Super Bowl spot in Super Bowl 2010. And after the Super Bowl, it got about 40 million views as of right now. Just the original spot. We're not going to get into the extensive post work that they did. About 40 million views on YouTube, additional reach there. Plus, Nielsen reported 55% increase in sales of the product they were advertising. There's a bunch of controversy on those numbers. There were reports from other people that said differently, but we're going to use Nielsen's. It's a nice average number. That's a quarter-on-quarter increase over the prior, before the campaign. So
arguably a success.
A success, Mustafa. If anybody remembers Terry Tate, office linebacker from the Super Bowl in 2003. So we have a very similar campaign originally, one of which was, they're both football players, they're both Super Bowl spots originally. They both had an online presence even afterwards. This was pre-YouTube and pre-Facebook. So we had downloads on Reebok.com. This was a Reebok. And we actually, just because we're pretty sure that nobody's seen this.
Does anybody remember Terry Tate, office linebacker? Excellent.
Terry Tate, office linebacker?
I'm going to switch you out.
Would you have, before now, identified that as similar to the Mustafa campaign?
Okay, good. All right, then we're on track.
I don't know how we're going
to... When we asked Reebok to send us Terry Tate, some people thought we were crazy. But I'm a firm believer in paradigm breaking, outside the box thinking.
Hey, buddy.
Break was over 15 minutes ago, Mitch!
And since Terry's been with us, our productivity has gone up 46%. We're getting more from our employees than ever before.
You know you need a cover sheet on your TPS reports, Richard! That ain't new, baby!
Hey, Terry.
Hey, Janice!
But what's really impressed me is how Terry's become part of the Felcher family. He fits right in here.
That's a long-distance call, Doug!
To be honest, I wish Reebok sent us 10 Terry Tates.
You want to play game, Gene? Well, when it's game time, it's pay time, baby! Woo!
Okay, so obvious similarities between the new spots, especially the ones that they did even after Mustafa. And Super Bowl ad, $1 million for Reebok.com. A big difference here that we see in, and we'll compare later, is that
just because
we know
I'm on
that
vacation,
number.
Don't mean I'm out to lunch. I come to play, baby.
He also, in fact, comes to play, in case you didn't know that. And similar numbers on the reports from Nielsen. That was over 12 months as opposed to quarter on quarter, but we have a 70% increase. And there were some other campaigns that were happening over those 12 months, but we can draw a similar comparison between the increased sales between Terry Tate, office linebacker, and Mustafa, despite the fact that he existed before, not before the internet, obviously, but definitely before Facebook and YouTube, which is where we get most of our sharing. So, channel, original channel for these was exactly the same. They were both Super Bowl spots. The speed is where maybe we have something changing. Terry Tate, we had people that still remember him 10 years later. Will we remember Mustafa in 10 years? Did everybody know that his name was Mustafa, the actor's name was Mustafa in that? I guess this is an audience that likely would. Not a bunch of babies. Reach and democratization of the information, similar aspects here. I think we're on the same thing. The big thing that we want to talk about here is trackable measurement. So in Terry Tate's case, we couldn't see if when you downloaded that video from Reebok.com, if you were watching it with three of your friends, or if you then emailed the file to your friends, or if you stood around in your cubicle and watched it at work. Whereas in Mustafa's case, obviously now we have things like YouTube view numbers and Facebook comments and Facebook
shareability,
likes.
Shareability, pass along,
all that stuff
percentage.
That Sarah's agency does and we don't. Because I think it's dumb. So we have trackable measurement now, and I think that that's one of the big differences that we do see, where we still have to produce the same creative content that people want to see. We still have to produce, we still have to get it that jump start by putting on the Super Bowl. Now we can hear people talking about us instead of just trying to guess if people are talking about us. 10 years later, we can see, well, sales went up and things like that, so we can see some effects of it, but we can't see it as it's happening, which is a change. Our work as marketers, though, to make that content and do the creative is really pretty similar.
And can I add something?
You may.
Please. Thank you. So what I was going to suggest is, in in the world of marketing and reporting out to, you know, our clients, I would argue that the internet has changed this very specifically, and that's the expectation of what we report and how we report. We all, you know, had the familiarity of, you know, circulation numbers, which was basically an estimate of how many eyeballs we could have gotten or should have gotten. And then now we have the actual knowledge of how many people clicked on it, how many people viewed it, how many viewed it all the way to the end. And while in the past that was the best we could do because it was analog, it was paper magazines or television commercials based on Nielsen ratings, we now actually are somewhat expected to be able to say how many people actually did this, how many people then went to the website and purchased the product or downloaded a coupon. It's powerful, but it also can be kind of debilitating. So I think what we've seen in our experience is that we have to change how we report, and we have to be on top of how we report and educate our clients as we go. So the expectation of what we report on and what it actually means to us commercially, meaning what we should expect in terms of sales or outcome or reach or awareness, has to still be translated the way we had to translate it in the past. So I would argue that the internet has changed that, and that is vigilance on reporting and metrics.
And I'm going to throw it right back and say, I would argue that selling deodorant and Reebok shoes is really what matters at the end of the day, and that's the metric.
Well, that is absolutely why the commercial was made in the first place, definitely. So, next one. Coney. How many times have you heard about Coney at South by Southwest so far? Anyone want to take a guess? I have no idea. Like, at least a dozen. So, for those of you who haven't heard about Coney yet, so Joseph Kony is a warlord dictator in Uganda who is known for kidnapping children and putting them to work in his armies. Bad guy. Everyone agrees that he's a bad guy. Okay. The reality is there's an organization called Invisible Children that recently created a 30-minute documentary video, posted it 8 days ago on YouTube. Eight. It is now at almost 80 million views. This is a 30-minute documentary-style spot. I mean, this spread is nearly unprecedented. So this is a very interesting perspective on people's awareness of global issues, people's awareness of what's happening, you know, from a humanitarian perspective, and viewing and pass-along definitely is a commentary on people's interest in getting involved and being educated. Now, based on that, what we've seen is that almost 90,000 views in 8 days, about 500,000 kits have been ordered at $30 each from the Invisible Children website. So the money that is being raised by Invisible Children related to the Kony campaign and the Kony documentary is not insignificant. Interestingly, as the numbers continue to grow on this particular video, it has continued to kind of become, you know, people have become aware of the fact that Invisible Children actually isn't an aid organization. They're not going and giving shoes and food and clothing or housing to people in Uganda or being directly affected by Kony. However, they call themselves an awareness organization. So it is their job, in their opinion, to make as many people aware of this issue as possible. And there are a lot of questions now circulating about where is that money going? And yet, 80 million people are behind the cause. And they're wearing Kony bracelets because that's what comes in their kit. This is a massive, massive success on an awareness scale. But what does it mean in terms of the actual product and outcome? So let's compare that to something from the past. How many of you remember We Are the World, 1985? All right. I remember it used to always get played at 5 minutes after 10 on the pop station in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I'm from. And I was already supposed to be asleep, but I had my Walkman and my headphones right next to my bed hidden so that I could stay up and listen to WKTI, play it at like 10 or 10.05. And I would lie in my bed as a young girl, crying and thinking about the starving children in Africa. Swear to God. Sorry. Honestly, it was, I mean, it touched me. Now, I didn't have any money to give to the organization, but this particular clip still brings back that moment for me.
There's a time,
come on,
when we heed a certain call.
must come together as one. I mean, those harmonies.
Is there anyone here that can actually identify everyone in this video? Yeah,
I might be too.
Yeah, I know you can. The greatest gift
of all. Keep on. Oh, Kenny Loggins. Pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. There's Tina. Okay. So. I think we all are familiar with the song, right? So what we learned, this is very manual. So this single sold 20 million copies worldwide back in 1985. That's unprecedented. There's only about 30 all-time singles that have ever sold more than 10 million. You know, this was a massive, massive undertaking. And there was over $65 million raised for humanitarian aid in Africa. Now, we knew that that was what it was being raised for, and people would get behind it, and that money would go to that. But the timeline on this is an interesting one, right? So that video was posted more recently. We had to actually go buy the tape and buy the album. And so it does kind of put an interesting timeline question on the internet piece of it. But then who's familiar with this? We Are the World 2010. 25th anniversary of the song We Are the World was produced back in 2010. And that's Justin Bieber as the opening singer for this song. 100 million views on this one. And actually it charted in the top 20 in multiple countries. Money was also raised in this scenario. Not particularly more or less. We don't actually have all the numbers for this. Couldn't find them anywhere on the internet, interestingly. But also it was done in the same recording studio with the same equipment as was used 25 years ago. So, but we do know that it was a massive success with 270,000 sold in the debut week. So people bought onto this as significantly as they did to the 1985 version. So then the real question becomes, was it the internet? Well, the Kony story is definitely an interesting one. Would people be less interested if they had less access? What do you guys think? Yeah? I'm sorry? Less aware. So you think the internet created that awareness in a different way? So, well, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. It can spread more quickly. Does that mean people wouldn't have been talking about it offline? Right. So, I mean, clearly we all agree that Joseph Kony should be stopped, right? But then the question is, what can we do about it and how can we get engaged? Yeah, that was, what were you going to say? Right, well, and it is 30 minutes long. I mean, honestly. And
we're going to pad time with it later, so if you guys want it.
We'd be happy to share the link. Yeah. Or you could go Kony 2012 into the Google. Yeah, well, and it's interesting. It is powerful. It is, it's done, you know, documentary style. And they actually leverage a lot of other YouTube videos in the intro section that have very high view counts, which I think was a very interesting technique to up the viewership, because we all know how YouTube works by cross-linking things that are tagged and referred to. So the channels are the same for the 2010 We Are the World as they are for Kony. The reaction is slightly different. I mean, the volume of people that are watching and using this video and then going and downloading this kit on how to support this Kony effort. That's how people's money, you know, that's how they're using their money. Yeah? Right, so there's a celebrity angle there. So those folks had access, and therefore awareness was spread word of mouth through celebrities. And We Are the World actually came on the heels of Bob Geldof's UK hit. And that hit was, Do They Know It's Christmas Time? And that kicked off the idea of everyone banding together and doing a song and kind of, you know, publishing something that way. But to your point, that awareness was spread because of celebrity, and that celebrity audience existed without the internet. So awareness can be built through volumes and through channels. So that would have been through television or through magazines or people standing out. So even while we were debating this particular issue, we were kind of talking about, it's like, well, okay, so is Kony this popular because of the internet or because of people's ability to access it? Would they have been able to access it before? Yes. Did they do it as quickly? I would say they probably couldn't have reached that number at the same speed. So speed, internet actually adds speed in this instance. Now the reach of this campaign is potentially the same as using traditional media, right? So, but the invisible children folks probably would have had to buy media, because we can't even discern right now if they're a for-profit or a non-for-profit organization, which is fascinating to me. But yet, people's support of it is similar to the level of support as they had for Feeding Africa. So we also know we can track the measurement of it. So they're not apples to apples, but we thought it was kind of an interesting comparison. Now, any other comments on this one? Okay. Oh, that's noise. That's audio. All right. So now here's an interesting example.
When you see the date 1992, you may think, all right, now we're going back a little too far to start our conversation. We're going to change things up a little here, and you're actually going to help me, hopefully with some of the stuff we discussed, decide what to do with a future idea. So Derek is actually one of the original memes in analog form. Back in 1992 in Seattle, a young man recorded his friend Derek on the phone calling the record store, and what was left was this 45-minute conversation between Derek and Kurt, and it is straight-up crazy. Perhaps balls-out crazy would be a more appropriate term. And it ended up getting passed around between touring bands. They would have a copy of this cassette tape, and as they were touring the country, they would, oh, dude, come in my van and listen to this tape. This is crazy, and let's do a ton of drugs. Sorry. So they would do that, and it spread pretty widely so that at some point in the late 90s, mid-2000s, if you were in a touring band in the U.S., you had probably heard of this tape or listened to it in somebody's van after a show when you're super wasted. So what we ended up with this tape, I work with a magazine called Found Magazine, which if anybody has ever heard of it, people send in stuff they find, and we publish it. So love notes, to-do lists, some really weird stuff.
Scrapbooks, scribbles.
Scrapbooks. Yeah. We have an FBI agent's files, a really bad FBI agent's files. He lost his gun a lot. We know that through letters from J. Edgar Hoover to him to tell him to stop losing his gun. Anyway, so this tape ended up in the hands of a radio DJ in Houston who sent it to us at the magazine in about 2005, 2006. And we had it, and we just knew we had to do something with it. It's amazing. But now here we are in 2012. We're in 2012 now, but
2012.
In myself that I'm speaking of, it was 2011. And since we have an animation division, and we had a new assistant that needed to earn her stripes, we decided we were going to animate to it. So I'm going to play you a little clip of it. No one has actually ever seen this before in this form, because we still haven't decided what to do with it. We just made this project based on Derek. It's already been a meme in its own way.
Hey! Fuck, my phone's fucked up. Hey, did you get the boot off?
Dude! Mission accomplished!
No way.
Gnarly!
What are you gonna do if the cops show up?
Dude, I don't know. Oh, dude, let me tell you what happened.
What happened?
Broad daylight, I break out. Imagine standing up, right?
Uh-huh.
These bolt cutters were half my height, bro.
For real?
For real. From my foot, they went up to like right below my armpit.
Holy fuck.
They were so gnarly. These bolt cutters have to be registered with the FBI to own them.
Holy fuck.
Seriously. I had a friend of mine, well, I told you about my friend down at the U-Haul. Yeah, they need those locks because they go the government goes into those storage places frequently, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes people, they auction off the shit, or if they think this guy's a drug dealer, they'll go in, you know, and they need the bolt cutters there, so that's how they were authorized to have these big motherfuckers.
Right.
So I called my bro, he gave me a ride down there. These fucking things went, like, right below my armpit. They were that gnarly.
Holy shit.
So, right? So I'm cruising down the street in broad daylight with these fucking, these bolt cutters, like, slung over my shoulder, you know, like I'm carrying...
Okay, so that's,
you want to see more,
that's a little snippet of Derek. That conversation is 45 minutes long, and it gets real weird. That's like the first minute of it. And like I said, it spread as far as it could in its old medium, if you will, literally analog cassette tapes being passed around through bands. So, so now we have this project. We actually cut it down to about 25 minutes in the animation, and we need to decide what to do with it. So the old channel was analog cassette tapes. It very limited access, obviously, very limited speed. I mean, it took 10 years for it to really spread around the country, and then only within a circle of, I mean, if you weren't in an indie rock band, probably from the West Coast, you know, you never heard this. Of course, they all showed it to their moms. Oh, and by the way, I was supposed to warn you that they say fucking that. So sorry.
Sorry about that.
Sorry about that. Not safe for people, whatever. Okay, so, and obviously the reach is low. Democratization, I can't say that word. That word of information, very limited. Obviously, you were only shown that tape or... shown that tape. That's the wrong word.
Given that tape.
If you were selected as cool enough to hang out in the van after a show, which I'm not. Sarah's been in a lot of vans.
Trackable measurement.
Actually, relatively trackable, just because you probably know everybody who had heard of it, at least through someone. But obviously, we can't just look online and see how many views it's had. So now we have this new piece of media. We've added to it. And I actually wanted to kind of toss it out and see, this is literally, we have not done anything with this yet. We have it done. We've added to it. We have a visual joke that wasn't there before with the bolt cutters. And what are we going to do with it now? Do we want to keep it in traditional media? We can go to film festivals. We can keep it on television if we feel like that's the best way to do it. Drive-in theaters is an excellent option.
I love that option.
I'm literally asking. After
for real.
What,
no, this is where...
Right.
What's the solution?
After we've been over everything, taking into account that we've noticed now that Leaf and Bieber are pretty similar, and they've incorporated some other channels, but we don't know who made more money, really, or we know who lost all their money. So far.
And his degree.
We know the Super Bowl spots. We know how they had a Super Bowl premiere. I probably can't afford that. We know the nonprofits and how they're working. They've embedded tools into their thing to give them money.
Cause independent. Because non-profit. Independent of
oh, and
cause.
I can't say nonprofits anymore. We had put that together as a nonprofit thing, but we don't know that they're nonprofit.
We don't know the Kona is a nonprofit, actually.
So,
isn't that interesting?
They're trying to help Africa. I guess that's the thing
awareness.
They have in common. And then now we have Derek. We know it does spread when shown to people, but will it spread in this medium? So that's what we want to know.
We've got drive-in theater. Guy in the closet on LSD, and he's a lizard.
I was in that.
Does anyone
one.
Know the name of that one?
That was well. I was the lizard.
Drinking out of cups.
Oh, I have seen that now.
Yeah.
That would be Hammer for everyone that's
MC.
Not familiar. Everyone that apparently isn't too legit to quit.
Yeah. Interesting point.
I'm actually also supposed to remember not only to not say fuck so much, but also to give you the microphone.
Oh, no, I don't think we need it.
The audio
so it's just
being
silence
recorded.
Now.
Okay, then
so
we need it.
So I think you should have
throwback drive-in theater events where people bring their tapes and you show other videos, like not just that one, but other YouTube videos, and you kind of do this offline movement that goes online and you hook it in with sort of throwbacks and like basically your magazine.
So you think that the offline component actually gives the opportunity a longer time period? Is that what you're kind of arguing? Okay, so online only is a flash in the pan.
Yes.
And having multiple channels extends that. Okay, that's interesting.
Yes.
Nice point. All right.
And if you ever do that, let me know. I do PR. I'd have fun at that event.
For drive-in movie theaters? Maybe?
No.
Have you heard of Found Magazine?
Found.
You should send us your tape, your hammer tape.
So my opinion on this is, like, I don't think we should, on all the other previous examples, right, there was monetization. Like, everyone's trying to make money. What's the bottom line here? What is, like, you got to figure out what's the bottom line of this. Derek, back in the day, I'm not close enough.
You with the money. You
just, money is the bottom line. So if the bottom line of this is money, you have to go to the internet. That's like the only way. Like I think your route is really creative, right? But it will never spread fast enough to where a lot of people will be willing to, like, all right, I'm willing to spend my money on this.
So should you go to the internet for free or for pay?
Well, if the bottom line is to sell the video, right, is that what you're trying to say? Or is it to sell an idea?
Yeah, but that could be, what is it? I mean, what is the product, right?
I think we're missing information in this equation. Absolutely. To figure out how to really figure out what the bottom line is. If it's the video, then yeah, you have no choice. You have to monetize it with advertising. Like, you watch the video.
Well, it could be to sell T-shirts.
The reality is,
it could be make more people aware of it, right? Okay, because that's what Invisible Children is claiming that they're doing that for, right? And that may be the case. They actually want to make a difference. But money is still involved. They're selling kits so that they can pay their filmmakers so that they can employ people and actually make more videos and make more people aware. So that's still bottom line money. T-shirts, wristbands that say Stop Coney.
And we have a magazine that we sell too, so we could sell the magazine.
But I think you make a really good point, which is we have to agree on what the purpose is. And I'd argue in every single one of these cases, the purpose is make someone money, whether it's through money to help people, money to buy a product, money from the product, money to give to people, right? It is kind of money. But the avenues are different. Sorry. Well, could it, right.
We're selling bolt cutters.
We're selling bolt cutters.
So my really obvious and boring idea is to go to like Rigid Tools or somebody like that, right? And one of those companies that has a sense of personality. Shorten it down to like 5 minutes or whatever, and then have the viral part would have people write like the ending of it. So I haven't seen the whole thing, obviously, but find a part of it where there's something next and you could, you know, reward some, you know, they get a all expense paid to the tool factory, right? Whatever it is, to a lifetime supply of bolt cutters. Right, but the idea is that for Rigid, you know, like whatever the tool company is to have this thing seen by, you know, a million blue-collar workers or whatever it is, right?
Unfortunately, it gets the bolt cutters fade into the background, and it gets straight up weird after that. So unless...
The point is, you pick the first couple of minutes, whatever it is, right?
But
the point's a good one, because you're suggesting a format could be that it's a sponsored program, or you find commercial sponsors that go along with whatever the storyline actually is.
And then maybe there's a different... Maybe you could slice it up into 10 different products, right? But in the first minute or a half, whatever you showed of us, like the bolt cutters were front and center and huge, and they actually had a very positive brand effect, right? Despite what was going on around
it. You can open anything.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, I thought it was, guys. That was my first thought is, wow, what a great ad for a big, solid bolt cutter company.
That's a really interesting idea, because so it's commercialized by sponsorship is the answer there, right? Okay.
Yeah, especially if someone is selling acid trips and death metal. I didn't see who was first, but we can take both.
Where is Derek now? That's a great question.
Yeah. So I think one thing to address on this is the role of influencer. So you brought up Justin Bieber, and Justin Bieber was on YouTube playing his songs and really to an audience of, you know, tens to hundreds until somebody with a lot of influence discovered him and said, hey, everybody's got to check him out. And then from there, his career grew. And looking at the commercial examples, those were on the Super Bowl. That was, you know, an easy way to get in front of 40 million people, but it cost you a lot of money to do that. So I think a lot of the examples you brought up either took a lot of money or somebody with a lot of influence. So something like the bolt cutter video, there's a lot of funny content. You've got to make sure that the people who see that are people that can share funny content with a lot of people.
So your definition of influence, you want to? Because we would argue that influencers can be defined very differently, but you go.
Well, also, you actually hit an awesome point that we're going to hit as soon as we move past this section, which is that all that thing, those things you mentioned had nothing to do with the internet. Usher found Bieber and helped him become what he is. It wasn't him just naturally exploding on his own. Sorry for the phrasing. And the Super Bowl spots, obviously, that's a very obvious push, something that existed in 2003 and in 1965, too. So, absolutely.
The role of influencer can't be ignored, absolutely. But we also can redefine influencer in a lot of different ways, right? Because you may have millions of 11-year-old girls who can be influenced by each other in smaller pockets, and those folks can influence purchasing behavior significantly, just not so much in one fell swoop. So you raise a really, really good point. There was another question.
I have it.
She's got
no, I was just going to say that I think something that's 25 minutes should be broken into five-minute segments that would go on across 5 weeks. And I think you could, like he was saying with the influencers, is you could bring some people in that had watched it in the early 90s, like people who heard that tape somewhere, like some bands, and bring them in, and all of a sudden they're saying, like, you know what I was, and like turn it into this really cool thing, and that could start each episode. Like I was, we had just played this crazy show, and this is what happened. Then I heard this tape, and then I think her point of like bringing in the physical, like really making it into something, is like having like Jimmy Kimmel with like parents showing their kids tapes, because like kids don't even know what tapes are. Like I've just bought a film camera, and multiple friends of mine asked what film was, and I was like, we're in our, like, I'm 24, are you guys in my same age? Like, they're like, so what does that mean that it's film? And I was like, oh no. So having some crazy, like, kind of getting behind this, like, okay, go to your nearest thrift store, like, find a tape and, like, take pictures of it somewhere, or, you know, like, think of like planking becoming this crazy huge movement. Like, where can you put this tape that could go wrong in some cases? But I mean, I think what she said really is important. There has to be something that
there's the human
makes
connection
it stick. Because I really do wonder with the Coney, like, I clicked on that video, but I haven't watched it yet. I've heard about that video a lot. Who's sitting down and watching a 30-minute video? I just don't know. I mean, obviously
the data's there. You can see how many people watch.
Yeah, obviously with 500,000 people buying it, there are a lot of people watching it. But how long will that movement go before it's all of a sudden like, oh yeah, you know, whatever.
Well, and certainly with those numbers, what we're actually trying to make us all think about is how do we actually define success, right? Because looking at that individually, a lot of people are going to go, oh, 80 million views in 8 days, that's what I want my brand to do. Because guaranteed that phone call is going to happen from one of my clients at some point in time. How did Coney get, you know, how did the Coney 2012 video get 80 million views in 8 days? Well, there's a lot of ways that happened, but the question is, what is the actual outcome? What do we need it to be? What did they want it to be? How would we do the same thing for their brand? And is it appropriate to do that? Is it the right thing? And because that video, 30-minute video, guaranteed cost them a boatload of money to make. It's a documentary film. So, but what I liked about what you were saying is that it comes back to the human connection, and that's the piece that helps tell that story. And that isn't necessarily internet. That's internet. Right. With or without. There's audio recording.
Sorry. So your money might actually be made, your cash cow might not be the actual video. And especially with you know, the internet and everything, it might be more of a 2.0, Derek 2.0 situation where now instead of you put that video out there and you try to actually maybe find Derek, find the two people, like, and have a call to action with that. I mean, that is almost like a, sounds like a good documentary to me. You know, you go out and actually see what the hell are these guys, are they dead? You know what I mean?
Oh, there's a million things. We do a lot of work with TV, so, you know, our first option would be, well, let's sell this, let's cut it into 5-minute chunks, and which we've already done, it's kind of in episodic pieces, and sell it to IFC, our lovely sponsor this evening, and sell it to somebody like that. But I didn't mean to do it that way. I was actually joking. Anyway, or we could write additional episodes on it, or we could use it as an inspiration for another program, like finding. We actually do know Kurt. We did find Kurt. We have not been able to find Derek. You may have to ask this guy. But yes, I mean, there's tangential things. We literally, the reason why I wanted to show it to you all was because it was a good, I think, way to sum up, say, like, hey, we have this thing that is a future example for one of these presentations, but it hasn't happened yet. So we actually are running out of time, so let's get to our final piece here.
The conclusion.
The conclusion page.
We did come to some conclusions. I think we upped the audio on this puppy. That's right. I'll just hold it like this, like rock stars do. So... I think we've made the point here that we through sort of the work that we were doing to find some examples to sort of make the argument was that marketing hasn't changed, but the channels absolutely have. And therefore, we have to adapt our approach for the channel and adapt our language for the channel and adapt our medium for the channel. The scope hasn't really changed. I mean, audience size, if you're looking apples to apples, people interested in a good product hasn't really changed, but now we can actually monitor digitally with numbers how many people actually can reach it. Whereas before, it was actually more based on estimates. Content hasn't changed.
We have two Super Bowl spots that are very similar. Where creative content has driven it. We have We Are the World, which was redone and re-released for a completely different cause 25 years later. The content remains the driving force behind that scope that we got in this conclusion before. It remains the reason why people want to watch it. The reason why people showed other people the Terry Tate video in their office cubicle was because they thought that video was funny. The same reason that applies to Mustafa today. Access has changed, but the noise has changed along with it. So when we talk about democratization of information, we see that, sure, I mean, everybody can see anything at any time on the internet.
Which means everybody puts anything all the time on the internet.
Right.
So the noise is greater, and therefore the democracy of it kind of has changed, right? We have to be able to filter through it. People look for tools to filter through it, and as a result, you're sort of back where you were to begin with, right? Which is there's a lot. There's
and
just
you,
a lot.
You still need Usher. You still need a Super Bowl spot. You still need... So the democratization and the access actually self-eliminated itself, and we're back where we started, but we still need a shtick to get Derek out there. We still need to do a drive-in thing or... I can't remember who was.
Or tell the story through
tell
people's
story
first
through,
experiences.
That's actually great, because if we can get the meat men to talk about it, that's the winner.
Mm-hmm.
That's the winner right
Absolutely.
There.
So then the question goes back to the audience, knowing that the time is up, and we're not offended if you get up because you have to go to your happy hour, because that's where we're going. What do you guys think? Has the internet changed everything or nothing or somewhere in between?
I think it's changed people's perception about the value of entertainment. It's probably the biggest thing, in my opinion, that has changed.
Interesting. So it's devalued it?
Well, obviously, if we look at music, you know, there wasn't a time really, at least in my lifetime, that music was free. Yet today, you know, I think most people perceive music to be free, hence, you know, 90%+ illegal downloads in regards to how digital music is consumed. And then in regards to video content, we have YouTube, which, you know, people maybe watch 2 seconds of because it's not worth watching, you know, the full 3 minutes, never mind 25 minutes. And, you know, I don't think there's even long-form video online, you know. So, yeah, I think the value, the perception of value has been diminished substantially because of the internet.
Interesting. Mr. Mark.
One of the things that's interesting with the Kony example is the amount of money that has been donated to arguably an unknown organization and a self-proclaimed awareness organization, whereas a lot of people question their money going to the Red Cross, which is a disaster relief organization. And I think that's something that the web has changed, where suddenly somebody can make a half hour, not arguing that it's a very moving emotional story that gets people to engage and react, but how do other organizations that are actually in the business of helping harness that type of, you know, because it's really in the storytelling, isn't it? And the
sure.
storytelling of the Red Cross, and I'm just using that as an example because I've worked with them before, how do they capture that type? Because it's obviously very, you know, powerful.
Well, you know, I think we've all heard the argument that the internet is sort of a truth serum, that the truth comes out because people have access to information or that type of thing. And in this case, that's why I thought the Kony example was such an interesting one, is that I don't think that people do their homework as much because the noise level is so high and attention spans are lower. Now, I'm not arguing that the internet is the only cause of that, but rather humans are the cause of that, and our use of multimedia at the same time and our consumption, information consumption tendencies. But, you know, to your point, how did we figure it out in the past that Red Cross was legitimate and not the, you know, We Are the World Feeding Africa? You know, how did we know they weren't all going to pocket it? Well, we had to believe first, or we had to have transparency to the organization. And all those questions are being asked of the Invisible Children crew right now. The Guardian in the UK is publishing a lot of information about it. We have to hope that journalists do their job or do our jobs ourselves. So the filter piece may have changed because of the internet.
There's actually a similar film that was out when you still had to buy it on DVD to raise money called Baraka. I mean, similar in that it was, I don't know if anybody's seen Baraka. It's a silent film that just kind of shows amazing stuff, facts about our world through visual images. And really powerful piece, got relatively popular, clearly not that popular, but they were selling that video under ambiguous. They were their goal was to raise awareness of conservation and our effect on the planet and other people's lives in other parts of the world. General goal, similar to Kony. Kony is a hockey player for the Devils.
And Kony is a basketball player.
Go Red Wings. But they were selling $30 DVDs that you had to go to Borders, Books and Music, which is now gone, to purchase it. So, but it was still as ambiguous as to where that money was going. It was done under the guise of conserving. The attention actually now with the internet has gone onto that much quicker. So people of The Guardian and things like that have spread the word that, hey, maybe this isn't super kosher.
I mean, Charity Navigator, which you guys may or may not know, is a website where you can just go and plug in any charity, and it gives you basically...
On the internet?
On the interwebs, okay. Yeah. You can get, you know, their financials, whether or not they're transparent. They're basically rate all the charities that you could possibly give money to. So I think in that way, I think that people are better informed because of the internet, because you know, places like the Red Cross actually had a physical presence, and you could see them in communities helping people through disasters and blood drives and things like that. With some of these more, you know, as some of these charities go more global, we're really not able to kind of go check out what they're doing. And so I think it's a really nice way for us to kind of tap into what's going on with the, you know, where we want to basically put our money.
I'd argue you could have looked that up 30 years ago at the library or through government records.
No, and like here's
but
pie charts
access,
on invisible
right.
children.
So access and ease of access makes a massive, massive difference. So maybe more people learn more about it. So maybe that's something that the internet has done. Does anyone else have a comment?
We have to kick everybody out right now.
We're done. God just said.
God is, he's super pissed.
God has said.
Mostly
thanks
because
everybody.
Of you.
Thanks for your input. This was fun.
Yeah, and thank you guys. Yeah,
thanks
you for coming.
Here.